the What I Watch Tonight show.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the What I Watch Tonight show. My name is Matt Hudson, and I am the Kaiser Soze behind the site whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. In these episodes, I chat with a guest who specialises in or just loves movies, whether they're a blogger, reviewer, director, screenwriter, actor. We have a chat, we ask some questions, and we just talk some movies, because otherwise this movie show would be pretty boring. So accompanying myself on the show tonight is, and from, the film grump himself, Kevin Crichton. How on earth are you, Kevin?
I'm very well, thank you. It's good to be here.
Fantastic. I'm glad to hear. Where I detect a hint of an accent. Whereabouts are you calling from?
I'm up in Scotland. I live near Perth in Scotland. A place called Cooper Angus.
I can't say I've heard of it, but my lovely grandmother is from Scotland. So and my dad, he says he's Scottish, so he was born in English, so we have ties to the country.
Best country in the world.
Yeah, you said it. I went there when I was about 10. We went to Inverness and I went on over Loch Ness and we had clootie dumplings and my dad convinced me that haggis were actually real and living in the field.
So yeah, that's a common one up here, actually.
Oh, good. It's not just this southerner's idiocy.
It's one we used to poke fun at to the English.
Yeah, well, it worked on this one, I tell you. So it would be, I guess it'd be remiss not to ask the origin of your pseudonym. Are you really a film grump?
Well, when I started the blog originally, it was called Kev's Film Musings, after my first name.
Okay.
But I didn't like the name, so I kept, what will I change it to? And I've got a reputation for being a bit of a grump at work. So I just thought, that works, the film grump. It just worked.
I like it. It sets your stall out nice and early. So
yeah, so I liked it that much, I decided to use it.
It's catchy, and I like it. So, how long have you been in the reviewing game for? And what kind of kick-started you into doing it?
Originally, it was on the IMDb. I used to do reviews on there for a long time. And I've got a profile there. And I started there, and then I got to thinking, because I have a habit of annoying friends with what I think about film. And one of the questions, I'll refer back to this, but I got to be thinking, well, I don't like using IMDb that much. I'll create a website. And then somebody suggested a blog rather than a website until you get used to the idea. And so that's how I started the blog. But I've been doing reviews for about 10 years, maybe, on and off.
Wow. Do you remember, just throw it in there, do you remember what your first one film you reviewed was?
The first one I did on IMDb was Jason X, I think it was.
Jason X.
I love it.
I know you're a horror head. I'm pretty sure I'm correct in saying that. And there's an upcoming film festival you're attending too, I believe.
Yes, called Dundead at the Dundee Contemporary Arts, the DCA.
I see what they did there. Is that just is that just horror films, or does it branch out into anything else?
Again, it branches out. There is horror films there, obviously. They're doing a Toby Hooper retrospective this year.
It's part awesome. Of
But they've also got some cult movies, some sci-fi films in there, some fantasy films as well.
That sounds quite fun. I consider myself a bit of a horror, a big horror fan, and sci-fi and that, so it sounds right up my street. We don't really have anything like that down here, which is annoying. I'm only 20 minutes to half an hour from London, but we don't have anything near us.
You could try Fright. There is Fright Fest in, but that...
There is Fright Fest. That's in autumn, I think, if I'm right. Or late summer, sorry.
Yeah, August. I was there last year. I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, I saw some of the films that came out last year. It looked really good. And this is going to show my naivety. I can't remember what the name of one of them was, but it went on to be, you know, do quite well when it was released theatrically. And I can't remember what it was, but it debuted at Fright Fest.
Raw, possibly.
It might have been Raw, but I did enjoy that an awful lot.
Yeah. It was an unusual film that.
Yeah, I don't mind the foreign language horror films, but whether or not it'd been an English, Scottish, French, Australian, German, it still would have been a strange film.
Well, it was a great film. I don't think any language would have changed that. It was a really astonishing film.
Yeah, I agree. I'd heard so much buzz about it, which is what I always fear, because I know you've actually touched upon this on your site, but I'd heard so much about Raw that people were passing out and it was too intense and it was the best horror film for years. So I went in expecting this kind of, you know, visceral masterpiece. And it was a bloody good film. But I'd heard so much before that it kind of almost took away what should have been that original kind of punch to the gut that it was.
Yeah, I do think films do get overhyped and you can't escape that as much as you want. I mean, with Avengers War, Infinity War, for example, you can't escape the hype for it. And when you go see it, that hype is in the back of your head. So whether it lives up to the hype or it doesn't, it'll probably dictate whether you liked the film as much or you didn't.
No, I agree. I hark back to the article you mentioned about hype. You mentioned The Last Jedi. I remember coming... I like the film. I really do like the film. But when I came out of it, I had a similar feeling to The Force Awakens, where I came out and I thought, how much did I actually like that? Because you have a year or 2 years worth of everyone hyping it up and, you know, the anticipation gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then then I sort of came out thinking, well, I think I liked it anyway. And that was a case, and that was very much due to what, like you've just said, everything gets hyped up so much that, you know, you're going in with that anticipation.
With the case of The Last Jedi, I really didn't like it on my first viewing. But I did go back and see it again and did think it was better second time round. Whereas with The Phantom Menace, for example, when that came out, I really liked it. And then I saw it again and thought, that's not a good film. Because it was the first Star Wars film for a very long time.
Yep.
The hype just got to you and you thought the lightsaber duels were great, the music was great. But when you actually step back from all that, the story was rubbish.
Yeah, everything else apart from the story was pretty good. The execution of it was rubbish. The story was okay, apart from when they started going into the uber political route. But yeah, the visuals looked okay for the most part. The music was great. Darth Maul looked fun. But then, yeah, when you kind of pull it back and think of some of the elements George Lucas added, because I remember going to see it at the cinema in 99, and I was obviously younger then, but I kind of enjoyed it, but it didn't feel like the old school ones to me. Whereas when I came out of these new films, yeah, you're right. There's so much hype that it's unescapable. Unless you don't have a Twitter, Facebook, Instagram or anything, you can't escape it. And obviously, yourself and I, we review films, so we're kind of out there. You can't escape it. And yeah, I think it does cloud your judgment somewhat.
Oh, I quite agree, totally. Although I will say this, to be fair to George Lucas, the prequels, for all their faults, didn't copy the original trilogy. The Force Awakens was a definite remake of A New Hope. And whereas The Last Jedi was something new, it didn't change things as much as it should have done, I don't feel. So I do think George Lucas gets some unfair criticism in some ways.
I think he gets a huge amount of unfair criticism. The prequels, for what they were okay. I like them. I don't think they're incredible, but I like them. You can see, a film shouldn't get a pass just because you can see what the filmmaker was going for. But the story, if you read it on the screen, the story is a good story. It's just how it was executed. It just wasn't perfectly good. But like you say, it wasn't a full-on riff of the original trilogy. Whereas, yes, The Force Awakens, I think everybody's gripe was it pulled too much from those old three films. There are arguments for and against why they did that, but yeah, when you have something like, I know, Revenge of the Sith, that's nothing like Return of the Jedi. I guess it's inverted.
Yeah. Well, the original title for Return of the Jedi was Revenge of the Jedi.
That's right, yeah, which kind of flies in the face of the PC, peacekeeping Jedi he wanted to put. But just talking about social media, my BDI noticed that you name-checked Wreck, The Blair Witch Project and Paranormal Activity as your top three found footage movies. I just want to throw that out there because I really enjoyed that first Paranormal movie. The Blair Witch Project still holds up, and Wreck, well, excuse my French, guys, but that legitimately scared the shit out of me when I first saw it years ago.
Well, I did the same. It's one of the few films that I've seen in a cinema that have just genuinely terrified me.
Yeah,
the last 15 minutes of that film, just amazing.
If you haven't seen it, guys, please do go out and see it. Because, yeah, that last 15 minutes is visually terrifying. The first time I saw it, I almost died watching it. It's our same as Kevin. I'm not a tough guy by any means, but usually with horror films, you can kind of see what's coming, or you can predict because some of them aren't very good, or you can get caught. I don't usually get terrified all that often. Scared, but not terrified. Wreck, however, bloody hell, terrified me, and I've got no shame in saying that.
Yeah, have you seen the sequel Wreck 2?
I've seen all three of the sequels. Wreck 2 is the best of the three.
A little confession, I actually saw that twice in the same day.
Really?
I was visiting a friend, and we went to see it, because I didn't realise they were in Glasgow the same day I was, so we went to see it. But I had an extra couple of hours to wait for my train, so I went back to see it again.
Is that because you liked it, or just because you had the extra time to spare?
A bit of both.
Yeah, I like the second one, because it carries on pretty much 10 minutes after the original, or straight away after the first one. And it feels like the first one. It's where it has that same aesthetic, and it's still just as scary. The first one is scarier, but the second one holds up.
I think so. I mean, a lot of people going about the two sequels, Wreck 3 and Wreck 4.
Mm-hmm.
Wreck 3 does that one thing right that most found footage films, as much as I like them, gets wrong. If you're in the middle of carnage like that, you do not keep filming. You throw the camera away and you run like
exactly.
And at the start of Wreck 3, that's what they do. They smash the camera.
Yeah, in the kitchen. That's what I think.
Yeah. And then it turns into a more conventional film, but it makes sense because you're not going to stand there and film zombies chasing after you. You'll throw it away.
Yeah. And I like the fact that they didn't just carry on the same old, that they did that. Because Wreck 3 is certainly a departure from the tone of the first two. And the first time I saw it, I was a bit iffy on it. I did think, well, this is a bit too sort of 1980s sort of comedy horror. But I rewatched it about 2 months ago, and it has got the comedy in it. But I much preferred it on this subsequent viewing.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it for a while, admittedly, but yeah, it just liked it so much. I liked the ending as well. I just thought it was a very good, it's more of a spin-off than sequel, admittedly, but I did like it a lot.
That's probably a very good way of putting it. Rather than a sequel, a spin-off is better. I think it plays out adjacent to the Wreck 2, I think, if I remember in the timeline. It's kind of going on at about the same time.
I think it's closer to the first one.
I think it's in kind of almost like 1.5.
Yeah.
And then Wreck 4 on the boat, which I liked the idea of them putting on a boat. I did like that, because obviously they're marooned. That is then a direct sequel, because that is after, has the same characters as Wreck 2. It very quickly references Wreck 3, but it kind of ties it all together. What did you think about the fourth one?
I liked it. Of the four of them, it's probably the one I enjoyed the least.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not to say I thought it was terrible. I just liked that one the least. And the end of it, which suggested a way of keeping it going, I thought was a bit too much.
Yeah, as soon as that happened at the end and whatever emerged, you did think, come on. Because I have the same problem with the Alien franchise, where you think, well, how many times can you sort of do the same old thing before it starts to feel a bit stale? And even when you do take it in new directions, it doesn't always work. But I agree, Wreck 4 was a good film. Yeah, Wreck 4 was a good film. But whereas, like I say, Wreck 3 tried something different, and Wreck 4 was kind of more conventional horror film. It had its moments, though. But I think when you start at such a high as Wreck 1, or Wreck, and then the second one, it's very hard to keep to those heights.
Oh, I totally agree.
Yeah. And I think Paco Plaza and Ballet Hero, they split films. I think Paco Plaza did Wreck 3, I think.
Yeah, he did 3, and the other director's name escapes me right now.
I don't want to say his name. Jamie Ballet Hero.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. He did the fourth one. I like the idea of them splitting them in two. Both having a go on each, but they were mixed results after the first two. But yeah, that first one is a horror classic to me, and that last 10 minutes is arse clenchingly scary.
Did you ever see Quarantine, the remake?
I saw it.
But not as good, is it?
No, and I find they did that with the other film, Martyrs, the other French film. That was Spanish. Martyrs is French, but they remade that as, well, Martyrs, and they just kind of changed everything about it, stripped it back, and took away what made the original French movie so horrifying.
It was actually, Martyrs is a case of a rare case these days where the reviews have actually put me off. I saw the original, I loved the original, although it's not a film I could sit through again.
Yeah, but I tried.
The reviews for the remake were that bad. I've never looked at it.
Yeah, it is poor. It's whereas the original Martyrs, it plays out like a film, which isn't necessarily. It's not trying to shock you. They're taking themselves seriously. They're not just throwing things at you. The remake is stripped back, and it feels like more of a horror film rather than that kind of psychological horror thriller. Whatever you want to call Martyrs. But the remake is an example of a very bad, unnecessary remake by Hollywood. And they also remade another French film called Inside. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
It showed at Fright Fest last year, but the remake. But yeah. I was basing something else, so I didn't see it.
It's probably better you did that as well. Have you seen the original?
I haven't, no. It's one of those on my list, which I've never got around to.
Yeah, that is another film that absolutely terrified me. It's, again, as you haven't seen it, I won't go into too much of it, but that one did terrify me because it's only a short film, as in that's about an hour and 20 minutes long, so it starts with a bang. Gone. After the first 10 minutes, it gets into it and it doesn't stop. It just strangles you the whole time.
I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, whereas the remake is, again, they went for the conventional horror slasher type film, and it just took away everything that made the original so good. And I really liked the original. It's artistically, it looks beautiful. The acting is, Beatrice Darla is an absolute tornado in this film, and everything just works. Whereas the remake, it just feels too glossy and it doesn't feel like raw enough.
That's a problem with a lot of remakes I've found. If you look at to switch over to American remakes, American films. Remake of The Last House on the Left.
Mm-hmm, yep.
The original film is raw, it's powerful, it's disturbing in its own way. The remake was glossy, it changed a couple of things which didn't make it, which worked less, and the scene at the very end involved the microwave. No. Just.
What about something like The Evil Dead remake? Because that's been held up as one of the better remakes. What did you think of that?
I thought it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I didn't dislike it. Maybe it could be the fact I went in fearing the worst.
because that hype.
Not so much hype, it's just the fact it's a remake of The Evil Dead. I mean, it's one of those films you shouldn't really be touching for remake purposes. And it was okay. It was gory enough, and some of the humour worked, but I'm just wasn't convinced by it.
Yeah, it's also a film that didn't really. Some do, but no film really needs to be redone. But that was one that wasn't really screaming for a remake of The Evil Dead. The first one was perfectly serviceable as it was.
Yeah,
I didn't mind the remake. I do agree on the sense that it is one of the better remakes of modern times. But I will always go back to the original. That's not always the case. The Hills of Eyes remake. I didn't mind that too much.
I'm a big fan of the Hills of Eyes Part 2, the one with the Marines. Of the four of them, there's the original one about the Wes Craven did in 76 or 77.
Yep.
That's the best one. But then I think the sort of Part 2 of the remake is probably my second favourite. Because I think it's because of the fact it kind of forgets about the sequel remake to the original. It doesn't have any ties to the remake of the Hills of Eyes and just does its own thing. I think it just worked.
That's another film which is, if I remember right, it's only about an hour and a half long, so it doesn't put any punches.
Yeah.
It's the National Guard. Trainees, amateurs, I think. So. It's the same story, but it tried to put an interesting spin on it, and it did work, I think.
As far as remakes go. Sorry, as we say, as far as sort of remake influences, I would say probably the closer remake influence to Hills of Eyes Part 2 would have been Southern Comfort, the Walter Hill film from the 1970s, which is about a Marine unit, sort of trainees as well, I think, or National Guard type, in a swamp. And the locals in there have a confrontation with them, and then the locals start hunting them down.
That's a good shout. It's an interesting point. I hadn't considered that, even though it's a very similar concept. I need to go back and check out that Summer Comfort again, because I haven't seen that for the best part of a decade now.
The DVD on the shelf for years, just never got around to watching it.
I said I watched it, probably ironically enough, similar to when The Hills of Eyes 2, Remake 2, came out about 10 years ago or something now. But I hadn't connected the dots there.
That's one of the things where I tend to notice, because pretty bluntly, I've seen too many films from Ungood at times. Sometimes that just pops in the head. It's like, oh, that film comes to mind.
As long as it's a good comparison, then that's usually okay.
Most of the time it is. Sometimes it isn't.
So, I mean, well, let's just dive in. Horror films. What are some of your favourite horror movies?
Well, I'll start with the obvious one. My all-time favourite horror film is Hammer's Dracula.
Yep.
But that's because I saw it when I was far too young, and it just scarred me for life. But if you talk about sort of more recent films, not even recent, but things like Dario Argento's Suspiria, John Carpenter's mm-hmm. Thing, The Babadook, what was the one? It Follows.
Yeah.
The 1960s version of The Haunting. And when it comes to horror films, the ones that really scare me are the ghost story type. A film that relies a lot more maybe on blood and violence doesn't scare me so much. But it's the ghost stories that really work for me, or the ones that have a sort of ghost, a haunting atmosphere to them.
That's what I've been saying on this show for a long time now, is I've been waiting for a good, modern, atmospheric horror film which doesn't rely on blood and guts and slashing and that. A film that you start off and it just very slowly but methodically just raises that tension and that dread and that fear. I've been waiting for one of those, and I could totally agree with why you'd want that. I saw a film called Ghost Stories recently with Martin Freeman. That's very good.
I really
enjoyed that. Oh, I'm glad you did too, because I thought it was bloody brilliant.
I wasn't sure about the wraparound story. I like the three short stories.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't quite completely sure about the way they resolved the wraparound story.
See, I liked it. I thought the reason I liked it was because I didn't for 1 minute see that coming.
Well, I didn't see it coming either. I'm just not completely sure professionally that it worked for me. But the three short stories I did enjoy.
And I like the fact that the three short stories did also intertwine somewhat. It wasn't a strange sort of anthology where they don't connect. They all connected somewhat, which I enjoyed that. So it did feel like a linear narrative almost going through it.
Yeah, I quite agree. Also, recently, talking recent horror, The Quiet Place.
Yes, that's another film which had all the hype going into it. But this time, one that I think warranted it, because I've said before, it wasn't an entirely original film premise, but it took what it had and it, bloody hell, did it work.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was kind of, a lot of people criticised the use of music in the film, but in a way, because there's so little dialogue in the film, it's more of a throwback to silent films, which rely a lot more on people playing music as they're watching the film to sort of help with their emotions of what they're seeing and what they're not seeing and such like. So I can understand why people were perhaps critical of the music, but I can also understand why it was there.
I think it needed to be there as well, because it wasn't ever going to be a purely silent film. And no. I think maybe this may be a sweeping statement or generalisation, but I think had it not had any music in, modern audiences may not have connected quite as much, simply because it may have felt too alien to them. If it is just 85%, 90% silence and 10% kind of whispering, shouting or running.
Yeah. I can see that viewpoint. As I say, I didn't have a problem with the music, but I could understand some of those that did.
Mm-hmm. I liked the scene with the music in it, that one particular one anyway. I thought that was a really nice touch in the film and needed as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was one of the best scores of the year, I think.
Yeah, we're only in, first week of May, so. But I can't. I think that's going to nestle certainly in my top 15 of the year, top 20, I think.
It's currently in my top 10, but that again, it's still too early in the year to resolve that.
My top 10, I hope it's going to look different by the end of the year, just simply because it just means that we've had another 6 months of bloody good films. But I am going to throw back to a film we just mentioned, that's The Thing, which is another scary film.
It's one of those, when I saw it, it terrifies me. It doesn't scare me so much now, obviously, because I've seen it so many times. Mm-hmm. But what I find makes up for the lack of scares is spotted little things that perhaps I missed the first time round.
Yeah.
A lot of things in the performances and such like. It's just one of those films that has grown and grown in its reputation over the years. Probably the best horror film in the 80s.
80s. I'm just thinking about when my favourite film was released. I'm going to let that one slide because mine was from the 70s.
my favourite one is the 1950s. So.
And what was that one again? So was that The Hammer, Dracula?
Yeah, the 1958 it was made. I didn't see it then. I only saw about... I saw it in the 70s when I was far too young to see it.
And which of the Hammer triumvirate was in that, or were they all in it? Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing and Vincent Price. Who was in it?
Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, Dracula, Van Helsing, but also Michael Goff in it, which is always a plus.
Yeah, of course.
Basically, everything. Hammer made some great films. They made a lot of bad ones, but they made some great films. But that was a masterpiece.
That's one I haven't seen, which now I feel shamed because it's your favourite film. But I will check that out. But I like Hammer horror films. There was something about them. It's that I like the... It sounds almost stupid to say, but I like the old style feel about them. And of course, like I said, the famed three, you can't really go wrong with Cushing, Lee, or Price. So I will go and check out Dracula.
There was a particularly good Blu-ray release a few years ago that apparently had the full version on it. I have it sitting on the shelf, but again, it's not one I visited recently, so I don't know what the differences are.
That's all. I've given you what film? I recommended a film to you to watch, Inside, and yes. I'm going to go and watch Dracula. So this is the point of the show: recommendations. I've got one. You've got one. Well, just before I go any further, I need to get your opinion on one thing. My mm-hmm. favourite film of all time, not just horror, is The Exorcist. What are your thoughts?
Right. I prefer Exorcist 3.
I can see why, because it's a bloody good film as well.
But this.
Glad he didn't say Exorcist 2.
I don't think anybody likes Exorcist 2. I think it's still to do with timing with me. I didn't see The Exorcist until about roughly 1988, somewhere about there.
Okay.
So it's had about 14, 15 years for its reputation to grow. So when I saw it, it was actually on an old videotape. And I thought, it's got a couple of good scares in it. I thought it was okay. I subsequently saw it on a cinema screen and that changed my opinion of it.
Mm-hmm.
But The Exorcist 3 I saw at the time of its release. I actually saw it in a cinema.
Was it 1990, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it's the only film I've ever been at where the audience has genuinely screamed in terror.
Was that the moment in the middle of the film in the hospital?
The hospital corridor scene. Everybody, yeah. If you know the film, you know the scene.
That is an example of why you should study film in school or university or college, because that is a perfect shot from start to finish.
It is. I mean, a lot of these so-called slasher films have all these set pieces of characters being stopped and then being killed off. That film does it better than most of them, and that's just one scene.
Yeah, well, I agree. It's a wonderfully shot. It's a static shot, so you're kind of watching it thinking, "What is actually going on here?" Do you know what I mean? It's you're kind of focusing on this one person doing the bits and the bobs and the rounds. You're not really noticing what goes on in the background or anything. You're just kind of sort of drawn in as to what's going on, and then when a big reveal happens, it's generally terrifying, but it's one of the good moments in that wonderful film.
A company called Scream Factory in America has done a Blu-ray release of Legion, which was what the film was originally going to be. Now, I've not seen that, but apparently what they've done is they've tried to make it as close to the version that William Peter Blatty originally intended, more based on the novel.
Yeah, it's from dailies and demo footage.
Yeah. I mean, the Exorcism sequence in Exorcist 3 is not a good one, I have to be honest.
It isn't great, but it was a last-minute addition, I think.
Yeah, basically, the producer.
Yeah, Morgan Creek or Warner Brothers needed an exorcism in an Exorcist film.
Yeah, but having said that, Josh C. Scott has a terrific speech about belief.
Yes.
At that point, but... The best thing about The Exorcist, apart from the hospital corridor scene, is Brad Dourif is the Gemini killer.
He generally elevates most things that he is in, to be fair. And he is another tornado in this film.
Yeah, I mean, the sequence where he's calm and then he starts ranting and then he goes back to calm again. It's just chilling to watch.
George C. Scott received a Razzie for some reason, so whatever to that. But absolutely, it's amazing because he's gone from sort of sedate and almost nonchalant as he's talking to Scott's character. And then suddenly he just explodes into this rage.
Yeah.
And I mean a rage. And then he kind of settles back down into his quieter phase and kind of almost turns comatose in the way he is. But it's a fantastic performance. I really like Brad Dourif as an actor anyway.
I quite agree. I mean, he's terrific in the film. I don't understand the Razzie thing. I've never been a big fan of these worst awards.
Yeah, I kind of have to wonder what movie this voting panel watched, because I thought he was fantastic, as he is in most things he was in. Patton, Dr. Strangelove, he's brilliant. I really enjoyed it, and I'm so glad we got to talk about The Exorcist 3, because I think it got a bad rap because of Exorcist 2, and I believe Warner Brothers knew that. William Peter Blatty, God rest his soul, knew that. I mean, he and Friedkin hated Exorcist 2, but I think it's tainted how people would perceive Exorcist 3, because it's a fantastic psychological thriller which deserves to have a place, you know, at the top table with The Exorcist itself. It's more people need to get out and see that and just ignore that The Exorcist 2 actually happened, I think, so it would, you know, give more credibility. But yeah, if you haven't seen this film, go out and watch it, because it really is a very, very good film. But, you know, there were... I gave it 9 out of 10, so it's up there, well up there for me.
I personally give it a 10 out of 10 in that one. But I will say this, though. I think The Exorcist itself, the first film, is a better made film than the third one.
I'm biased in the fact that I think it is, but for William Peter Blatty, I know he did The Ninth Configuration and things like that before, but I think he really shows his directorial skill here with a lot of visual imagery connecting the scenes together. He does really well.
And it's got a nice little Joker cameo as well.
It's got a cameo from quite a lot of people, I think, like Sam Jackson.
There's a statue that turns into the Joker at one point.
Yes, it's very brief, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's very effective.
It is. There's a lot of brilliant imagery. Like, the dream scene works better than it should have done. And there's a scene in a confession box. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, with the
yes, that voice is terrifying. So it's another fantastic scene in the movie.
And also, it's actually, before it gets to that part, actually, it's actually quite funny to begin with, the exchanges between Father Dyer and Kinderman.
Yeah, I kind of get over the fact that they look nothing like they did in the original film. But yeah, as they're going back and forth, talking about the carps and their chemistry, it really adds another layer to the film.
I like the way it's developed. There's just a little nice humour there.
Yeah, and if you go back and watch Exorcist 1 and then Exorcist 3, their character payoffs work really well, I think. I won't go into what happens to them, but the way their story directors go, pays off really well, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that, yes.
And of course, we get... Well, it's not a spoiler, it's on the video, the DVD box, but you also get Jason Miller's back, which is always a great thing, because he's a fantastic actor. And his storyline as well also merits him actually being in the movie in the first place.
Yeah,
he's another late addition to him, and he was in the book, kind of. The Gemini Killer has a resemblance to him, but that's another example of a change actually benefiting the movie, I think.
Yeah, be interesting. I'm kind of curious to see how the Legion cut, as it's known, on the Blu-ray. How deals with it. Jason Miller's character, Father Karras, was never meant to be in it. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays without that, without him being in it.
Yeah, well, any amount of Brad Dourif is a good amount, and I believe he would be just as good in the role by himself. But now that we've seen the scenes with Jason Miller in it, I kind of feel like I'd be looking back thinking, I wish they were back in, because they work so well.
Right, I did read the book around about the same time I saw the film, and the book is different, certainly.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot that was changed. Well, actually, not a huge amount that was changed with the novel, but the ending was certainly changed. I know that for sure. it was a lot more abrupt in the book, and actually in the Legion version, it is a lot different, but the final version we got is incredible.
Did you ever see the fourth one, rather the two prequels?
I did, unfortunately. Anything with the word Exorcist on, I eat up, even the TV show. But what is it? The Dominion and The Beginning. Yeah, I did. The Dominion, I think, was the better of the two, but that was kind of just above average, I'd say. Whereas The Beginning was just awful, I thought. I really didn't like that film. But yeah, I did have the misfortune of having to see both of them, really.
The Beginning. I there's a sequence in it where you say character and somebody in the audience that was the screen I was at shouted, "Come on down." I think if you know the film, you know what's in it. And the screen just erupted in laughter.
I know exactly which bit you mean. Yeah. But I don't want to say what it is because it gives too much away. But well done, that person, I think.
Yeah, so no, I do agree. The Dominion, was it Dominion, the prequel to The Exorcist? I think that's the full title.
Yeah, Paul Schrader's.
Yeah, it's certainly the better of the two prequels.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a great film in its own right.
Yeah, the better of those two isn't saying an awful lot, really. But
yeah.
I like how they went the more spiritual version, that spiritual aspect of it, rather than going more balls to the wall like the Beginning tried to and failed. And some of the CGI was appalling in it, but Stellan Skarsgård throughout both was superb, I thought.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I mean, even two different films playing the same character, he managed to pull off
an
essentially the same story.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's amazing how they kind of went from having one, binning it, and remaking the same film. But yeah, the Dominion is better. Yeah. There are some bits of it which I do enjoy. I'm not going to pretend I don't.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Marion's trying to looking back at his past and finding out where his faith started to dwindle somewhat. But I can't really think of many more scenes in it that I did enjoy. To be totally honest,
yeah,
it just seemed Warner Brothers were just cashing in on the name for a quick buck. I think.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, Exorcist the Beginning just went too far in the end. It looked too silly. You could see what was coming from a mile off. Some of the CGI in it was absolutely bloody abysmal. The guy who played Brick in Snatch was in it, and he's the most poorly cast person ever. I could go on, but on the subject of bad Exorcist films. When was the Exorcist 2? What? Let's just crack on. What did you think of it?
I watched it again recently and fell asleep watching it. That's what.
Yeah, I can see why you would want to do that.
I saw it years ago, a very long time ago. The only time I've ever watched it in full. It was a long, long time ago. And it just made no sense to me whatsoever.
Who's the guy? John Borman directed it.
Yeah.
He came out and said he didn't like the first one, so he's just going to make his own film. Part of me wishes he had watched that first film because introducing the dream machine and that flying on the wings of the locust and James Earl Jones is dressed up as a sodding leopard. I think it's mental, but there are some scenes in it that I did like. I thought the score was good from Ennio Morricone. I liked the introduction scene. I thought that was quite good. I'm struggling to think of any more, though.
Yeah, I barely remember, to be honest, because, as I say, I saw it a very long time ago, and to me it made no sense. And then when I saw it again, admittedly, it was late at night, and I did fall asleep watching it, so I've never gone back to look again.
No, it's a film I go back to every few years because I enjoy that first one so, so much, and the third one. That I kind of think, well, I'm going to try The Exorcist 2, the Heretic. I'm going to keep trying it until one day I might see what Borman was aiming for. But every time I come out just smiling because it's got some of the worst dialogue I've ever heard. Richard Burton, you can see him becoming more and more pissed as the film goes on. Because Linda Blair said it herself. She came out and said, as the film went on, Richard Burton just became more and more sozzled. He was drinking more and more. Because I think he had I think he had marital troubles at the time as well, but you could just see it in his face. He's just not there half the time.
Yeah, I think he got to the stage where he was like, "I'll just get through this any way I can."
Yeah, I get paid at the end of this.
Yeah,
kind of like me on a usual work day. But yeah, the Exorcist. There's a treat for you guys there. If you do like the Exorcist as much as I do, there's five films worth there, and the TV series actually just quickly is actually pretty good. I haven't seen that.
I've gone on Skybox to watch, just never got around to it yet. It's all there.
I never usually watch TV programs because I focus on films, but I had the Exorcist name on it. It did take me a while to watch it, though. Season one had finished before I'd even watched it, but I went back and watched it, and there was one moment in season one after about six or seven episodes where I sat there, because I was watching it on my Kindle, sat there in bed and audibly, you know, what the f-? I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, that's a twist and a half. And the second season is pretty good as well, but that first season plays in as more of a kind of closure to the first film, if you will.
I have a simple rule when it comes to TV series that if I'm watching it and after four episodes it hasn't gripped me, that's it, it's done.
But I think that's a very, very sensible rule, because too many people switch off after the first one.
I mean, having said that, there are series like The Walking Dead, for example, that I've just never got into.
Yeah, I've never actually seen The Walking Dead.
I watched the first series, it was okay. Started watching the second series, lost interest, never come back to it.
Yep, there you go. The Walking Dead's not for us, guys. There's a lot of TV which I want to watch, but I never get around to because, again, given the choice of a film I haven't seen before or a TV episode which I'm going to have to spend the next 10 weeks watching, I take the film because that's just what I prefer them, to be honest. But there is some good television out there.
Yeah, the Terror that's on just now, I'm really enjoying that.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of that.
It's based on the book by Dan Simmons, I think it is.
Okay.
About the an expert, based on a true, it's inspired, certainly inspired by actual events, about a ship, an expedition to the south, the Antarctic that goes wrong.
That already sounds pretty cool.
And it's only at the fourth episode that's on stand tonight. But it certainly seems to imply that there's a more supernatural reason why the thing went wrong, as opposed to perhaps what really happened.
Oh, cool. So is it a kind of thriller type show, or is it marketed to be scary, or?
It's certainly marketed in the sort of horror genre, I'd say.
Oh, excellent. What I'll do is I will wait for your recommendation online, because this is indeed the fourth episode. This is your threshold. And if it gets a good review, I will like it. Because if I am a bit bad like that, if it's something to do with horror, I'm more likely to jump in and watch it on television programs than I would do if it was something like Downton Abbey, which is probably very good. But I would, by the sound of it, The Terror, just from your synopsis, it kind of sounds like an old 80s film almost, the way you've mentioned it.
I'm trying to think of something I could give a comparison film-wise, and there probably is something, I just can't think of it off the top of my head.
There'll be, yeah. It'll come to you, but it'll come to you before the end of this anyway.
Yeah.
So jumping onto your website, because you do reviews and you also do editorials, I guess you could say, about the state of film or people talking in the cinema, which really winds me up, or women in films recently, which I found that to be an interesting read. What do you bring to your writing that makes it, you know, this is Kevin's writing compared to anybody else's?
I don't think about it, in truth.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
In the sense of, if I start writing an editorial, for want of a better word, I just let my mind go. And so that's why sometimes they wander all over the place, because I don't really think about it. Because if I sat down to plot out what I was going to write, I probably couldn't do it.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that from a few people sometimes, like it's just easier to just write whatever comes into your mind.
Yeah.
I liked the recent, I think it's one of the second most recent article about women in film. I thought that was an interesting article. I mean, where did that kind of come? Did you watch a film and just thought that's the last rung type thing?
Specifically on Uprising.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I have, yeah, unfortunately.
Well, when they bring back overall, I thought it was a fun movie. Nonsense, but fun.
Oh, yeah.
But when they brought back the female character from the first one, whose name escapes me right now.
I know who you mean, yep. His half-sister.
Yeah, the half-sister. You knew exactly what was going to happen to her from the moment she spoke.
Yeah, you do. And it makes it more and more obvious as her short scenes go on.
Yeah, and then there's just something about the fact that scene, and I started thinking back to other films that have been out recently that I did the same thing, and I thought, you can't just basically, it's a spoiler, but you can't just kill a female character to motivate the hero. He needs more motivation than that. And it just bothered me that much that I started thinking about it and decided to write a few words on it.
Yeah, and check out Kevin's article, because it's you'll find yourself agreeing with it, because it's not, it is as he's just said. The majority of females who are either brought back or just in a film so simply to be offed for the male character to have a motivation is a quite a prevalent thread in recent years. And I mean, it always has been, I guess, but it's just slightly more noticeable now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not talking about, for example, I mean, although they are a problem in their own way, I'm not talking about like serial killer films, for example, that usually have female victims in them. I'm not
talking
about those. I'm just those that kill a character off just to motivate the hero. I saw the trailer for the new Equalizer film.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seemed based on the trailer, they're doing the same thing there.
Yeah, it's almost like a cheap convention now. Whereas at least John Wick killed a dog, or they had his dog killed.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest thing they would pull. I wouldn't have been surprised if the original idea was we'll kill his wife.
it may have been. That's you're right.
And then they thought maybe the dog would be a bit more fun in that sense.
Yeah, and I don't like seeing dogs get killed, so I react more to the dog than the wife now, because it's almost like you're attuned to seeing it now. It's become so it's not in serial killer films or horror films, because you know anyone's game in those films, but there are a certain type of film where the women are only there simply to act as motivation for the man to succeed, like you do mention in the article, it is flipped around. It sometimes, the men are offed as well at times, but it is generally the females.
Yeah, so probably about 60-40, no, probably more than that, probably 80-20. Women's characters dying as opposed to the male characters for motivation.
Yep, maybe one day we'll have some more stories which try to do something a little bit different, or just not have anybody dying as motivation. We just try something new, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there's umpteen different variations they can do on that, and just do something better.
Yeah, here you go, guys. Do it better, okay? so talk about things which have been done better or done good, if you will. What movie has left the biggest impression on you for any reason whatsoever?
The biggest? Biggest impression? Zulu.
Go for it. It's in the film that nobody's mentioned, and I'm so glad you have done.
But it's a personal thing. It's about the motivation, because it's linked to the memory of my dad. Now, my dad is still alive, but he suffers from dementia.
Right.
And every time I watch that film, which I absolutely love, it's a brilliant film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also misunderstood, but I'll come back to that. But every time I watch that film, I always think of my dad, because it was one of the few films he ever watched. He was not a film fan, but that was one of the few that he always watched.
And it's not a bad film, too, if you're only going to watch a handful.
Yeah.
It's if anybody doesn't know, it's Zulu. It is the film about the British soldiers at Rorke's Drift. Yeah, they're outnumbered, and they're battling with the Zulu warriors at Rorke's Drift. And they had a young Michael Caine in it.
Yeah. The thing about the Zulu's a bit misunderstood as well. Because of the fact it's the white man against the black man in a basic form,
yeah,
a lot of people think it's a racist film. It's not a racist film. The heroism is downplayed. It's not really a battle for heroism. It's a battle for survival.
Yeah, because they're completely outnumbered.
At the end of the battle, there's no celebration. It's just tired resignation. They got through it. The Zulus are always portrayed in a respectful way, for lack of a better word. And it also shows their heroism in running into battle, despite the fact they're being gunned down. So it's a very fair film, I think. It's not one side or the other. It's a very balanced film, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think I don't know how it was perceived when it came out, because obviously I was only a glimmer then. But more recent eyes have pointed out those facts, I think. But I don't. Do you know how it was? Was it perceived like that years ago? Or
I think when it first came out, it was just perceived as this big action film that we loved. I think as time then it became less. People didn't like it so much because of the whole idea of white man domination over the black man, and African, and so that kind of played became part of the so-called racism in the film. People started commenting on that, But I think over the last few years, it's kind of gone back the other way now, where people are realising that the film isn't a racist film.
No.
It's just a good action film that is very balanced.
I think so, and it's also got an absolutely superb performance from Stanley Baker in it.
Yeah.
As the Lieutenant. That he's fantastic. I think it's well acted. The whole of it, all of it's well acted. It looks great. And I echo, the story isn't meant to be so, you know, it's not meant to be presented like it is. You take it at face value, you can see that. But if you watch the film and understand the film and the motivations of the characters, and as you quite rightly say, the ending, like I said, there's no celebration, there's no big kind of firework display or anything silly like that. It's, you know, it's quite a heavy story.
Yeah. And I don't have to mention the score by John Barry, which is sensational.
Yeah.
One of the best themes, I think, in film.
Yeah, I agree. Who was director again? Is it Cy Enfield?
Yeah.
I think he's an underrated director as well.
He made the sequel. There's a prequel made in the 70s called Zulu Dawn, mm-hmm. which he was involved with as well. And the same producer as Zulu, not the same director. And it's about the Battle of Isandlwana that you see the aftermath of at the start of Zulu. It's not a bad film. It's just nowhere near as good as Zulu.
Well, the thing is, again, you've set the bar as high as you have with Zulu, yeah. Especially for a follow-up. Any film's hard enough to follow up, but a marvellous film such as Zulu, you kind of already at a disadvantage, I think.
Yeah, but to be fair, it doesn't do it following afterwards. It deals with the battle that you see the aftermath of and how the British lost that battle. And when you watch it, you just think to yourself, British officers are stupid.
Yeah. Well, Blackadder also did a good job of showing that as well, but yeah. in a slightly different tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a film that I would say is worth watching if you're a fan of Zulu, but just bear in mind it's not as good as Zulu.
No, if you have a recommendation, check out the film Zulu, and get into it, watch it, get into it, and sort of, I don't want to say appreciate it, because that almost sounds patronising, but, you know, really invest yourself in it, and you'll see past any perception, which is sort of more modern perception of what it actually is about, because it is a damn fine film.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to ask a very boring question now. What was the last film you watched?
Infinity War.
Oh, it was the last film. What did you think of that?
It's going back to the hype thing earlier on, which I mentioned. When I first saw it, I had issues. I still have some issues, but I enjoyed it the second time I saw it.
Did you enjoy it more than The Last Jedi?
Yes.
Yes. I thought I'd ask that simply because they were the two which had that hype going into them. I think when I came out of Infinity War, I knew that I enjoyed it then, whereas with The Last Jedi, it took me a while to absorb it before I realised, no, actually, I did quite like that, yeah.
I think the problem I had with Infinity War is, to be fair, some others have said, it's only half a film in a sense.
Yeah.
We know Avengers 4 is going to deal with the aftermath of this one, so it's going to... You might have to wait until you see the next one to understand fully what happened here. And how, certainly the ending, how they're going to resolve that. That being said, are you a Doctor Who fan?
I can't say I am. I don't dislike it, but it's not something I've ever followed.
Yeah. There was a series with Matt Smith, coming out of season 7 possibly, maybe, mm-hmm. Where the very end of that is basically, you know, the penultimate episode of that series. And the Doctor's sort of trapped in a prison, if you will, and the universe is dying.
Right.
And you think, how on earth are they going to resolve this? Now, they managed to resolve it, and I'm not completely sure I understood how they managed, but they managed to do it. And I got that feeling watching Infinity War. I can't quite see how they're going to resolve this. I'm kind of fascinated to see how they do it, but I'm not sure I'll understand how they do it.
No, I can see how it's going to end up as such, but I don't know how they're going to get there.
Yeah, I think Marvel actually made a mistake. I mean, you've got Ant-Man and Wasp coming out in a few months' time. Which is set, yes. Which I believe is set before Infinity War.
I think it's set just before, I think, or yeah.
And then you've got Captain Marvel coming out, which is set in the 1990s, I think.
Yep.
But unfortunately, what Marvel should have done was then not mention any other film they're releasing.
So just have Infinity War and then
The
next four, Avengers 4.
Yeah, because we know, it's because they've already announced you're getting things like Black Panther 2, there's going to be a Spider-Man 2, and so on. So we know they're going to resolve it some way. Had they not announced anything, you have really no idea how they would, what was going to happen next. Because these films have already been announced, what's coming after Avengers 4, you can kind of say, well, okay, then this is going to happen and that's going to happen and this is going to have to be resolved.
Well, exactly. That's exactly what I mean. I know. I can see how the. I think I can see how the end of Avengers 4 is going to play out, but I don't know how they're going to do it. And I think they've already filmed it. But what I worry though is because of the ridiculously huge reception that Avengers Infinity War has got. You know, it's tearing apart the box office and its biggest opening weekend and blah blah. I wonder if the story they've created is going to match up to. Or even the film is going to match up to the height of Infinity War, or will it feel like an anticlimax? Because if Infinity War had about four or five moments where you kind of sit and think, "Bloody hell!"
Yeah,
didn't see that coming. Yeah. Are they going to be able to raise the stakes, or even keep it at a consistently high level, or will it kind of be a moment where you think, "Oh, that's how they did it. Oh, that's a bit of a cop out."
I suspect they might go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
This one's epic. There's no denying it. It's an epic film.
That's huge, yeah.
I wouldn't surprise me, because if Marvel have the confidence, if they do something that's very low-key.
Okay.
Go the other route. And everybody will be expecting Avengers 4 to somehow top of Infinity War. And maybe that's the way they will go. But I'd like to see them be really daring and do it in a completely different way. Do something low-key. So instead of a big battle to resolve everything, it's something quieter.
Interesting. Like you, I struggle to see how they're going to do it, even if, whether it's a low-key or a huge war-to-end-all-wars type thing. I still just don't understand how they're going to do it.
I suspect...
We'll do it well, I mean, satisfyingly.
Without trying to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, I suspect Doctor Strange's comments play into how they're going to resolve it.
Oh yeah, I think so. But when he's... Oh, yeah, there's only one.
He knows.
But... Yeah. Well, to be fair, I have, regarding Infinity War, as it's been out for 2 weeks and there's been so many spoiler-heavy reviews, plus the fact that it's, by the looks of the box office, everybody who wants to have seen it has absolutely definitely seen it now. So if you want to go further into it with comments, please do. We've thrown out the spoiler warning. So.
Thank you for the offer, but this is where I have a rule. I try not to give out spoilers if I can help it.
I like your rule.
And the reason being that with everything that's available now on DVD and streaming and everything else, mm-hmm. you can't watch everything when it comes out.
Yep.
It's impossible. So you might be a few months down the line before you catch up with a particular film. And I'm mindful of the fact that if I say something about a film, for example, it might be a spoiler for somebody who hasn't seen it. A few months afterwards, or even in some cases a few years. If I'm writing a review for my blog, for instance, or an article, like I did with the Wicker Man piece, I will put spoiler at the top of it. So if you read it, you are going to be aware that there are spoilers in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes you can't talk about something without giving them the spoilers.
A film like Infinity War is quite hard to speak about in any kind of depth without, because, I mean, we've already tiptoed around a few things.
Yeah,
that's quite hard not to speak about with spoilers. So I agree on that sense.
Yeah, it's just the one rule I have, because the last thing I'm mindful of is somebody. It's something that gets me when people are live tweeting films out when they're watching them, live tweeting the film, and they start talking about various plot points. I just stay away from that because I don't want any of that, because it might be a film I want to catch and I just haven't caught up with it yet.
Yeah, I generally don't read live tweets of films anyway. I just put it on myself. I'll just watch it myself. But
yeah.
I see. I don't. Again, it's something I've been through most of the episodes. Is there are always people out there who seemingly live and breathe to spoil things for other people. However, they are malicious in doing so, but they're also idiots. So
yeah, I mean, there's a character death at the start of Infinity War. I think anybody who's been watching the build-up and rumours probably knows which character I'm talking about.
Yep.
I found that... I kind of suspected that was going to happen during the film. Admittedly, I didn't expect it to happen so early in the film, but I expected... But that was spoiled for me by somebody when I was on YouTube looking at something completely different. Wasn't even looking for Infinity War, but somebody had put up a title on a video that came up, which spoiled it.
You can't trust anywhere, which it sounds so silly, but you can't.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, that one was less of a spoiler in a sense because I kind of figured it was going to happen.
But you want to see it yourself.
Yeah, but that's why, I mean, when the film came out, I think on the Wednesday night,
yeah,
I avoided social media for 2 days because I wasn't going to get to see it till Friday. Because, to be fair, most of the followers, people I follow on Twitter, they're very good at not giving me spoilers.
Yeah, because I've got a brain. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people commenting recently that certain films, I'm quite precious. I don't care what film it is. I don't want to know what happens. I don't care if it's a drama, period drama, a horror film, a superhero epic, a Star Wars film. I don't care what it is. I want to watch the film with my own eyes. But there are some films which aren't going to have big moments in it to be ruined. So I guess the upcoming Solo, a Star Wars story, we know that the good guy or the main characters get out of it. So there's nothing in that film which is going to be mind-shatteringly spoilerific. Whereas something like Infinity War, because that's a continuation of the story, that's the kind of film you definitely don't want to be spoiled on. And unfortunately, there are people you can't go anywhere online, seemingly, even if you do it with the best intent. You can't go anywhere. You have to turn your bloody internet off for 2 days. And it's bad, I think.
I also think some websites have a problem as well, because if they're doing a piece on why this person may be the villain of this film, this is actually on a website, mm-hmm. and they put a picture at the top of the article of the character they were talking about.
Yeah.
Who turned out to be the villain of the film. So if, whether or not the article was a spoiler, I didn't click on it, but I'd already seen the film by the time I saw the article. So I'd already knew who that person was, the bad guy. I just think some websites can be a bit more selective when they're putting photographs up and images up, tying them up.
Be more selective with their spacing as well, because I read so many articles which have the word spoiler warning in, so that it'll be within the paragraph, so it will say that if you don't want to see know what happens, don't read on, spoilers ahead. Then the next sentence will start the spoilers, and you know, your eyes are generally, you know, sometimes your eyes are naturally drawn to parts of the page, or you'll just see a word.
Yeah.
And I've done that before with films where I've not wanted to know anything, but where they've said click off now, and I stupidly clicked on the bloody article, then your eyes just get drawn to a word, and you think, oh, bloody, now I've seen it. Or if the article, because I never go into an article if it has the word spoiler in the title. If it's just a article about a film, I'll go into it, and then it may then go on to spoilers, which is what this one did. But if it says, I don't know, Infinity War, spoiler scene, I haven't seen the film, I'm not going to go into that one.
No, I mean, some people don't mind getting from spoiled for them. They don't care if they find out so-and-so died or this person lives or whatever. Me, I try to avoid them.
Yeah, I understand and appreciate and respect how anybody wants to watch the film, but me, I don't quite understand that. I don't want to know what happens in any film because I want to see it myself and experience it myself, regardless of genre or anything, or age of the film, whatever. If I can go in totally raw, like I managed to do with Infinity War, then it hits home a lot harder, I think. So, yeah, I'm not one for spoilers. So, yeah, we'll move on from Infinity War then, in case we end up putting our foot in it, to something. So, Zulu was the last answer, but if you could just save one movie, if the entire canon of movies was burnt to the ground and deleted, but the guy with the match said you can save one movie, you can only have one movie, what are you picking and why?
Oh, I've thought about this one.
Tough one, I think.
Akira Kurosawa's Ran.
I've got that film, I've watched it, but I've got that film on my to watch list, and I only shout that out excitedly because I was typing about it today. So it's a long film, but go for it.
Yeah, I only saw it in 2016 because I was at the Dundead Film Festival that year.
Yeah.
And they were doing a screening of that film the same day, and I was like, can I make it in time to see the film festival? And it was the 4K restoration version.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked absolutely jaw-droppingly amazing on the big screen.
I bet it did on the big screen.
It got an introduction from a guy there at the time who was explaining about Kurosawa, how old he was, in his 80s, I think it was, when he made it. And it's been based on King Lear and such like. But the visuals, there's an astonishing battle scene in the middle of the film where they drop the music completely and just allow, sorry, they drop the sound completely. I think they drop the sound.
They do, yes, sir.
Yeah, and it's just utterly amazing to watch. Yeah. The performances are fantastic. It's just, I can barely talk about it, but it's just such an astonishingly visual film. And it's a bit like Mad Max Fury Road in a way. You wouldn't believe the director was in his 80s when he made it.
Yeah, no, Kurosawa can never be accused of having ugly looking films. Oh, his films generally look superb.
Yeah, I mean, I up until I saw that film, I thought Seven Samurai was the greatest film I'd ever seen.
Yeah, and then?
And then I saw Ran.
Yeah.
I will add a caveat to that. I've not seen Seven Samurai on a big screen yet.
That might play into it then. I can imagine that 4K restoration of Ran would have looked superb. But what I liked about Ran, again, was it's kind of, it had this sort of theatrical epicness to it. It was like you mentioned King Lear. It was like a Shakespearean, bloody Shakespearean film throughout it. And the choreography is powerful. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the visuals are amazing. I think it's not CGI.
No.
Those armies are basically armies of actors.
The good days, eh?
Yeah, I do regret the way CGI is kind of taking things over. But it's just the best film ever made.
That is a huge statement, but it's one that has its merits because it is a superb film. It does take its time getting into it, but that isn't a detriment at all. Yeah. It's just a film that develops. It allows itself to develop naturally because it's just under 3 hours long. I want to say 2 hours, 45 minutes, 2 hours, 50 minutes, something like that. But it breathes. It doesn't rush in or it doesn't stagnate. It just takes its time.
Yeah, and some of the visuals are truly, truly extraordinary.
Yeah, they are. It is it's a destruction for lots of it, but it is a superb-looking film. And like I say, Kurosawa is known for those kind of visually beautiful-looking films. And again, his choreography is always on point. The Seven Samurai is another, and that's probably his most famous work.
Yeah.
But it's another example of a damn fine film. But Ran, I think it flies under the radar because of, you know, the popularity that Seven Samurai has.
Yeah, I think critics generally think Seven Samurai is the better film.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, me personally, I think Ran is the greatest film I've ever seen.
Do you think this is a question that probably can't be answered until another 30, 40 years, but do you think you'll ever see a film which overtakes that?
Well, to be honest, until I saw it, I thought Seven Samurai couldn't be passed.
You never know what's coming, but...
Yeah, I mean, the only one that might rival it, and I have seen it, but it kind of grows up with me every time I see it, is Powell and Pressburger's A Matter of Life and Death.
Uh-huh, yep.
Which I think is an astonishing film. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
I have seen it, I think, once. How many times have you seen Ran, by the way?
Just the once.
So just once, and Matter of Life and Death?
About four times. But only once. I think I've only seen it once in the cinema, and the other times have been on TV.
It would have to do quite a lot, I think, to overtake Ran, as you've seen it four times compared to the one. But I do know the film. I think David Niven is in it. I would put Ran ahead of it, but that's the beauty of film, is that, you know, everybody, there'll be people out there telling me now that I'm totally wrong, but... That's why we do this.
Yeah. I mean, I once tried to sit down and actually compare the 10 greatest films I've seen, and I had to give up after two.
It's tough, isn't it? It's so tough because, especially if you're just going to throw them in as a 10, it will take you a while. But if you actually specifically try to rank them, that's when it gets extremely difficult.
I'll let you know a little secret: though, Zulu wouldn't make the list.
Really?
No.
To toot my own trumpet, that's why I like that question, because it's not asking you what the best film is or anything like that. It's what left the biggest impression on you. And the reason I asked that is because it doesn't always have to be the greatest film. It could be, I've had people say things like The Room is left the biggest impression on them, or Scream and stuff like that, but they're not necessarily their favourite films.
Yeah, I mean, Zulu will be my favourite film of all time. Mm-hmm. There's no getting away from that. Whereas Dracula is my favourite horror film, but it's not the greatest horror film I've seen. And likewise, Zulu is my favourite film of all time, but Ran is the greatest film I've seen.
Yeah, it's your criteria, it's a different thing. But I'd be interested to know what a top 10 would look like then. I can imagine it'd be bloody good compared to the films that haven't made it.
Well, the only ones that can, in no particular order so far, I've got Singing in the Rain.
Yes.
The Third Man. Ran, Seven Samurai, and that's it.
That is not a bad... Well, is that a top five at the minute almost, but that is not a... Sorry, The Third Man is also another one of those Orson Welles films that I think gets underlooked slightly because it's not Citizen Kane or something like that. But The Third Man is a very good film.
I absolutely love it. I think it's possibly the best British film ever made.
Again, that is a huge statement, but it's not without its merits. So I don't know what I'd put in my top 10. Obviously The Exorcist. And then I struggle because I've got lists where I would put my favourite films of all time, but that doesn't necessarily quantify it as my best films or what I would achieve, what I would perceive as the greatest achievements in cinema. So it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, the favourite films, to me, it's a way I look at it is this. Ran is a film I couldn't sit and watch every day. As much as I love it, I couldn't watch it every day.
Yep.
Zulu, I could. But that's not because... It's because Ran's a film, you just need to let it wash over you.
Yeah, you absorb it.
Yeah, so I only watch it every so often. Well, I have only watched that one once, but in the case of Seven Samurai, which up until then was my favourite film, I'd watch it only once a year.
Mm-hmm.
But a film like Serenity, for example, the Joss Whedon film, which I absolutely love, I could sit and watch that every week. And it would still entertain me every time.
It's a sign of a good film as well.
Yeah.
I'd probably throw something like Seven into the mix because I can watch that film over and over again and always get blown away by it.
Oh, it's an astonishing film, although the ending was slightly spoiled for me at the cinema.
Oh, really?
Yeah, without giving it too much away, when the delivery man arrives, I heard the guy in front of me whispering to the person next to him what was in that.
Oh, no. And then I'm assuming what he said transpired.
Yes.
Oh, no, because that is, again, that's another astonishing twist, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's not one, because, the way that they're writing and the superb acting of all three of the main characters in that scene is done, your mind is taken away from what else might be going on. You're in the moment. So when it does happen, it is like a punch to the throat and the gut at the same time. It's such a brilliantly horrible moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to what we talked about earlier in the article, I think, about women being killed for the hero to motivate him. It ties in with that to a degree, but it's done for different reasons.
This wasn't done for sensationalism or to spur him on or anything like that.
It kind of was, but not in the so-called traditional way.
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, it's not done when you compare it to the films that you mentioned. It has that kind of same end game to it, but there's a head of a lot of different feeling behind it.
And it's not done. It's not one of these things that happens at the beginning of the film. It doesn't even happen on screen.
Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah, which is a good thing, which makes it even more powerful.
Yeah. So that is one of the films I put in definitely into my top 10 because it is, even though it's grimy, grim, dark, and horrible, it's something about it which it's like a magnet. I get drawn into it every time. I think it's just the lead performances are just stunning. But it's a film which can be dissected, and every scene can be broken down. So I'm gonna. In fact, one day, try and put together a top 10. My only worry is because everything's so transient, there's always films being released, so how long will it remain valid for?
I quite agree. I mean, as I say, I've got four just now, but chances are I'll be sitting about it, might think about it later on and think, oh, I might put that in there. Then tomorrow, now that's coming out.
Exactly. Or you could theoretically come up with 20 films, which you really hold dear, and then you think, Christ, I've got to whittle this down now.
Zulu would make the top 20, I have to be honest, but it wouldn't make the top 10.
That is interesting. But one day, I'm sure we're going to compare lists and then eventually in years to come, look back at how much they've changed. So talking about films which wouldn't make your top 10 or your top anything, what's the worst film you've reviewed or just seen? Or both?
Transformers Age of Extinction. It is the only film I've ever watched. Now, I have never walked out of a film, ever. You know how bad the film is, I will stay there till the bitter end. That's the closest I've ever come to walking out.
I applaud your resilience there.
I call it stupidity.
Yeah.
I absolutely hated it, but worst of all, it made me angry.
Yep, I can see why. I didn't mind the first Transformers film, even though it still had that horrible Michael Bay sliminess dripping from it. But they just got worse and worse, and Age of Extinction was probably, even though there's more films after that, probably was the crowning turd.
Yeah, I mean, the so-called Romeo and Juliet thing?
Yes, yeah.
When that scene happened on screen, I nearly stood up there in the cinema and shouted at the screen. I got that angry when that moment happened in the film, because up until then, they'd been photographed, the way Michael Bay was filming the daughter character. She was like, pin-up model and everything. I was trying to sort of sex her up, if you will.
Just that film with his bloody women, and it's horrible.
Yeah, and then you realise that she's actually like under 18, or meant to be under 18 in the context of the story.
She wasn't and much then, older than that in real life, either.
Yeah, which and you think, you can't really film her like that. And then you come up with this Romeo and Juliet thing, which just, oh no, I mean, if I'd been Mark Wahlberg's character at that point, I'd have killed the boyfriend. I wouldn't have just had words with him. I'd have battered him senseless.
Yeah, I would like to batter Michael Bay senseless for making the film almost 3 hours long.
But I think Steven Spielberg gets off lightly when it comes to the Transformers films.
Go on.
He's credited as executive producer of the Transformers films.
It's something which doesn't often get mentioned, you're right.
And yet, he knows how to make a summer blockbuster. I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark, I mean, don't make it be a summer blockbuster, but it's a blockbuster.
Yeah.
So he knows how to make these kind of films. As he never looked at them and thought, we can do better.
He must be getting paid a hell of a lot of Wonga for having his name on the film, just to basically not worry about it.
That's all we can assume, because he knows that he can make films better than that in his sleep. Even some of his worst films are better than the Transformers films. And yet,
most of my worst films are better than the Transformers films, and I haven't made any.
Yeah, I mean, I think he gets off too lightly because of his reputation.
I think so, yeah, and I also think it's because of the general, if I can use the word, fury towards Michael Bay is so fervent that people do just generally forget that Spielberg has anything to do with it, because people are so focused on the crap that Michael Bay, the sexualising, the unfunny humour, just everything about it, the vulgarity of it. I think people just focus on that, and I think they forget about Spielberg.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason The Rock is regarded as the only good Michael Bay film.
That is a good film.
Because Jerry Bruckheimer is a damn good producer.
Yeah.
And he's a strong producer. I think he's sort of the producer, I think, that would stand up to Michael Bay. But then you put in Ed Harris and Sean Connery, who would take no prisoners.
Sean Connery especially.
Yeah, and so I think the director basically, he just kind of dialed it down and just basically did as he was told.
Yeah, I think so. And when you've got the new fast forward to 2014 with Age of Extinction, Mark Wahlberg seems ever so happy to pick up a fat paycheck. He has made himself extremely unlikable just because he's in those films. There's something about him which I just can't gravitate to.
I've never been a huge fan of Mark Wahlberg, to be honest. I mean, I saw that Patriots Day one about the Boston bombing he was in.
Yeah, recently.
I had a problem with his performance in that, because apparently his character was an amalgamation of two or three other characters, or real-life characters. But it was like he was single-handedly doing everything.
I don't like those. They're the kind of films I don't like anyway. It's when you have, which is what a lot of people shite on Dunkirk for, because there wasn't that one character who was, you know, leading the charge from the sea, the sand, the beach, and the air. It was because, you know, they were the everyman soldiers. They didn't need development. Whereas you get a film like that where you've got one guy running around doing everything and you just think, this is just taking me right out of what should be a pretty powerful film.
Yeah. I will say this for our worst film, that an honourable mention must be Prom Night, the remake.
Oh, yeah. Talking about remakes.
That is a awful, awful remake. But it's also a film that brings a lot of amusement to a friend of mine. There's a friend I used to go to the cinema a lot with before she moved away. And when we went to see that film, she had to put up with me ranting in the car on the way home how bad that film was. The following week, we went back in to see something else, and I was ranting in the car all the way there about the same film. I would rant to anybody in earshot how bad that film was.
Pussies.
But it still wasn't as bad as the Jurassic.
That's probably not one of Idris Elba's finer moments either, that remake of Prom Night. I can imagine he doesn't speak about that too fondly.
Yeah, and then there was When a Stranger Calls, which gave away the plot twist in the trailer, which was fun.
That's right. A lot of trailers do that nowadays, which is what I applaud the Infinity War guys for doing by having a trailer which basically just has none of the film in. It's brilliant. They misdirect everything. Great. People don't go in knowing what happens.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the shot in the trailer of them running through the trees, led by
Captain. That's the one, yeah.
I actually read an article today about that where it said that was shot intentionally for the trailer.
Exactly.
Film.
That's exactly the point, yeah. That they put that in so people wouldn't go in, you know, you're expecting this, it doesn't happen, so your expectations are almost raised more. I like that I've seen some people getting antsy about it, saying, oh, it's against whatever it's called, when they're misleading the audience purposely. I can't remember what they called it now.
I think it's the ordinance, because it's still the army charging at the battle, it's just done a different way.
Yeah, it's it's going to really annoy me now. What is a term that people use? Misleading advertisement, whatever. But I quite like it. I think it adds to the mystery in the cinema when you think, hold on, when you think you know what's going to happen, doesn't. I think it throws you into a different mindset, which is for the better.
Yeah, I quite agree. For example, that trailer has the Hulk in the trailer. Of course, yes. He's nowhere to be seen in the final battle.
Yeah, if you're watching that scene and you're too busy wondering where the trailer shot is, then you're watching films wrong.
Oh yeah,
I think.
And the films also the film's not working for you.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about it at the time. Yeah. It wasn't until afterwards when I came out and had a look and sort of started reading and I read that people were saying that this wasn't in it, and that's when I hoped that they'd actually done it intentionally, and I was so glad that they did, because it's good in this day and age where everybody's trying to stay two steps ahead of people, that in fact actually the filmmakers are clever enough to throw some red herrings out of there. I quite appreciated that.
Yeah, I mean, social media is in a way a curse, because somebody's got a camera, for example, and they take pictures and everything else. Oh, look, a costume reveal, because I haven't been in the area where we're filming and things like that.
Yeah, it's the best of things and the worst of things at times, so yeah. I'm glad we have it, but yeah, unfortunately it does allow for less, for more seedy elements to come out, which when you just want to enjoy something as simple as a film, you can't even do that without having to essentially turn your part of your life off for 2 days. It does get a bit silly.
Yeah.
But so if certainly it wouldn't be Michael Bay, but if a director out there was going to make a film about your life, the Perth Grunt Project, what who's playing you in that film?
Since he's local, Brian Cox.
Bloody good actor as well.
Yeah, he's actually from Dundee, so.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't think he lives there. I'm not sure if he lives there anymore, to be honest, but he was from the area.
I have no idea about that, but he's a very, very, very good actor. What's the film? I saw a film recently with him in The Autopsy of Jane Doe, I think it was.
Yeah, I saw that last year at Dundee. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, that was probably the last film of his I saw. I also saw it. I think I saw it at the beginning of last year or middle of last year, so quite a while ago, but I thought that was bloody good, brilliant film. And again, another very short, snappy film, but it really worked for me. I liked the premise of it. It was quite interesting.
It was a good mystery, and it didn't do the thing I was expecting it to do, which made it better.
If I'm on the same wavelength, then I agree with you. I liked the way, I liked the direction it took.
Yeah, I mean, and also the fact, as I say, there were one or two things that were a bit predictable in it, but apart from that, it was really good, atmospheric, creepy. I just loved it.
Yeah, yeah. I like those films where they're set in essentially one location, and you know that no one's got any idea what's going on, and it feels claustrophobic and a bit chilling, and it worked quite well for that reason.
Yeah.
So far, I know your the hype and anticipation of films is kind of dampened your thoughts on the movie reviewing game recently, because, like I say, going expecting so much because the world tells you you have to. But if anybody out there is thinking about doing a blog, a website, movie reviewing, what kind of words could you give them to give to, you know, shape the direction they take?
Be honest. If you don't like something that everybody else likes, say so. Mm-hmm. Likewise, if you like something that everybody hates, and just, it's a cliched phrase, but just speak from the heart. If you're watching a film like Infinity War and you really hated it, be honest and just say, I hated the film.
Yeah.
I find if you're more like that, then people will think, all right, okay, I can see where they're coming from here in that regard. So when they say they didn't like this film, but they liked Black Panther, but they didn't like Infinity War, for example. They might say, well, I like Black Panther for this reason, but I hate Infinity War for that reason, and they can understand the difference.
Yeah.
But if they say they like something just because everybody else does, and they didn't really like it, but they just want it because they want people to read their review or whatever. No, just be honest. If it's, and they say, I mean, I'm not the best writer. I will openly admit that, but I enjoy writing. And people seem to enjoy what I write.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for. If people are enjoying what you write, it's because there's something about it, which generally will be an honesty, which is something which they may not find elsewhere.
Yeah. But,
and on that note, if people out there, if you did like Transformers Age of Extinction, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It didn't work for me or Kevin.
Yeah.
But if there will be people out there who swear by that franchise, and that's movies. You could, people do whatever they want. It just didn't work for us. So if you're listening to this now and you're sitting there thinking, Christ, I really like that film, I don't want to press publish on my review, just do it.
Yes.
People shouldn't. If anybody goes onto your review or your Twitter or whatever and says you're an idiot for liking this film, then I think it's more of a reflection on them than it is you.
Yeah, I mean, I always respect somebody who goes to the cinema. I always respect their point of view on the film that they go and see. I may sometimes question their choices of film they've got.
Yeah.
if you were a writer for a review of Age of Extinction and you wax lyrical saying it's the greatest film ever made, I may leave a comment to say I disagree with it, but I wouldn't disagree. I would respect your opinion of the film.
Yeah, you're not going to disagree with the fact that somebody likes it.
No.
But yeah, it's if somebody spells out why they like something, then you can't argue with it. I agree. But if it's just a case of, I thought this film was shite, and that's it, you think, well, care to elaborate? No, but I agree, take Kevin's words on board. Be honest, be yourself, and don't be afraid to, you know, wear your likes or dislikes on your sleeve, because at the end of the day, movies are art is subjective, it's made for, not everybody's going to like everything, so...
Yeah.
On that is that for this episode of the What I Watch Tonight show. Thank you so much for coming on and giving your time, Kevin.
It's been a lot of fun. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
It has been. I've enjoyed it an awful lot, especially finally being able to talk about the bloody Exorcist 3. So where can the world find you online or just in the world?
You can find me usually on Twitter. I'm at KJ Crichton, C-R-I-G-H-T-O-N. And then I've got the blog, which is the Film Grump blog.
And the link is on Kevin's Twitter.
It's on my Twitter page, yes.
Yep. And the Film Grump is where it's at, so head on over and have a read. Or if you happen to be in the area, check out the Dundead Film Festival and buy this man a pint or a carbonated soft drink.
It'd be a soft drink, I have to drive.
Yep. Buy him a soft drink of some sort then. So once again, thank you so much for coming on today, Kevin. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can catch all of the episodes on our website, which is, of course, whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Subscribe on iTunes and get this episode and everything before and afterwards. We're also on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podknife, YouTube. We're taking over the world one play at a time. So if you like what you hear, share the episodes and tell everybody. If you don't, well, don't tell anyone. And of course, don't forget to tell your lovely grandmothers about the show. But until next time, see ya.
Vlogging.